You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I'm Julie Broadway, president of the American Horse Council.
And I'm Emily Stearns, health, welfare, and regulatory affairs liaison for the American Horse Council.
And you're listening to the special monthly American Horse Council episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for July 2026.
It's time to hear from the American Horse Council in this monthly episode of Horses in the Morning.
So, Emily, I'm really excited about today's episode because we're talking about a new opportunity that puts students at the center of shaping the future of the equine industry. If you are a student, you are the parents of a student, or you're an instructor at the college level, pay close attention because we've got some great opportunities for you.
Yeah, so the American Horse Council's Marketing Alliance, which has launched the AHC Marketing Alliance Team Challenge, gives colleges and university students the chance to develop creative ideas that can help grow engagement in the horse industry.
And we are not talking about small classroom exercises here. Selected teams can receive up to $15,000, yes folks, $15,000 in funding to turn their ideas into real-world projects.
And what I really love about this challenge is that it recognizes that students can bring in these fresh perspectives. So they see opportunities and trends and ways of connecting with new audiences that the rest of us might miss when we're trying to bring folks into the industry.
You know, when I was first getting involved in the industry as a young professional, I remember having lots of ideas about things I thought we could do differently or ways we could reach more people. But as a student or someone just starting out, it can be really hard to know where to share those ideas or who to turn to or how to turn them into any action.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people can relate to that. I always get excited when we bring our students in as interns because I feel like that's an opportunity for them to kind of share their ideas and they teach us stuff because some of the best ideas really come from people who are new or upcoming in the industry because they aren't limited by the old horse standard of, you know, this is the way we've always done things, which I think we're all pretty guilty of a lot of the time.
Yeah, indeed. The equine industry has a strong history and tradition, but its future depends upon attracting new participants. So we need new ideas and we need new leaders.
Yeah. And so what this challenge is all about is giving students the opportunity to take those ideas and actually do something with them.
Yeah. And so let's talk a minute about how does the challenge work, who's eligible, what kind of projects are being encouraged, and how can students get involved?
We've invited a special guest to answer those questions and tell us more about this very exciting new initiative.
So we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. Are you looking to connect with the best in the horse industry? Visit Equestrian Directory, your trusted resource for discovering top equine professionals, services, and businesses across the country. Whether you're searching for a trainer, a veterinarian, boarding facilities, or events, Equestrian Directory makes it easy to find exactly what you need all in one place. Proudly supporting the equestrian community alongside the American Horse Council, they are here to help you build connections that move your passion forward. So start exploring today at equestriandirectory.com. So please join us in welcoming Jen Blachard, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, the marketing director for Zoetis and a longtime member of the American Horse Council's Marketing Alliance. So tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, Jen.
Sure. Hi, Julie. It's great to be here. You nailed the pronunciation. I'm Jen Blanchard, and I work for Zoetis, which is the world's largest fully dedicated animal health company. I have the great fortune to be the head of marketing for our equine division. And so I still pinch myself that someone's paying me to think about horses because I tend to think about them all day, one way or the other anyway. I'm also a lifelong equestrian and competitive three-day eventer based in Charlotte, North Carolina. So you may know Zoetis from products like ProStride or Quest or Dermosedan. And I also have the great privilege of serving on the American Horse Council's Marketing Alliance since 2021.
And we're great so to be here. Thrilled to have you on the Alliance and to be part of the podcast today. I have to tell you guys that those three-day eventers really think outside the box, and they have to come up with innovative solutions. So the fact that she wears a marketing hat in her day job makes perfect sense to me. So
we like electrical tape and sometimes metal limbs.
Eventers unite. We need more eventers on the podcast. Okay, so Jen, the Marketing Alliance has been around for many years, and it's done several different initiatives. What exactly is the team challenge, and kind of how does it differ from other initiatives we've done in the past?
Yeah, so Marketing Alliance obviously has long predated me. I first crossed its paths with the Time to Ride initiative, which was really focused on creating opportunities for more folks to get that great time in the saddle and time with horses. That initiative then evolved to the Here for Horses platform over the last 5 years. And that exercise was kind of taking the next step and realizing that there's a big gap for individuals who may be interested in horses, whether engaging and riding with them or whether participating in event observation, to really find out how to take that next step. What's in my community? What are resources? Where could I go if I want to learn more? And so the Here for Horses initiative was designed to create a centralized resource hub where anyone who was, let's say, horse curious could go to one location and find resources based on discipline, based on type of activity, where they could then figure out how to take that next step. And so I think the team challenge really arose out of that Here for Horses platform as we started to ask ourselves, all right, we have this great resource hub, but what's next? Because we know that, you know, you can lead the horse to water, but you can't make them drink. And so we asked ourselves, how do we get folks who maybe don't even know to take that first step and get them engaged in this industry? We've seen industry research that suggests that there are perhaps 39 million households in the United States who have some interest in horses, whether it's an affinity for horses, maybe they're already watching racing or equestrian events, but who don't own a horse themselves. And so obviously we all benefit as an industry when we have a really robust pipeline for engagement. And so as the Marketing Alliance, we started to ask ourselves, well, where can we go from here? We have resources, we have a destination, but how do we get people to take that first step? And so we know that our Marketing Alliance is made from some truly tremendous industry leaders, but we've all been in the industry for a while in some form or fashion. And so we said, let's set our, you know, gaze aside and let's look to the future because they may have some really fresh ideas. And that's how this team challenge idea was born. It's really outsourcing or crowdsourcing the question of how to get more folks engaged with horses to college and university students who bring that sense of perspective and fresh ideas.
So let's lay it out really plainly for everybody out there. The team challenge is basically an RFP, a request for proposals, that we're putting out to college students and universities across the country saying, we want to see a plan for you to increase engagement in the industry, get new people into the industry, and we're going to give you $15,000 to do it. That is the heart of the team challenge. Am I right?
That's exactly right. And it's pretty open-ended. I think one of the things that we grappled with as a council was how prescriptive do we want to get? And we came to the conclusion that if we box things in too much, we may be leaving great ideas out of consideration. And so we've defined the objectives, we've defined the approach to sort of how we want to see proposals structured and how we'll evaluate them. But really the mechanism in terms of how to drive that engagement with these horse curious audiences, we're leaving that to the participants, and we're tremendously excited to see what the teams are going to bring forward.
I believe, guys, that this is also a real world opportunity for these students. They get to see and have the experience of what it's like to work in this industry and maybe parlay that into a career somewhere down the road by being part of the team challenge. Everybody doesn't need to be an equine major. You know, they don't have to all do that, because a team gets together and somebody might be the finance person. Somebody might be the marketing person. Somebody might be, you know, a little bit of the subject matter expert on the industry. So there's lots of different ways to pick and choose the skill sets that these students could participate in doing part of this whole exercise. Emily, you were an instructor at the University of New Hampshire. Tell me, when you were doing that, what kind of things were students constantly looking for to get them that kind of real world experience?
Yeah. So, you know, equine programs at universities and academia in general is something the Horse Council follows really closely and supports really strongly. We just had a whole panel discussion on it at our conference, and people can go to our website and see that recording. It's a really great discussion. And I think in terms of the value students can provide to the industry can get kind of forgotten about. It's very easy for us old fogies to think of these 18, 19, 21-year-olds as kind of big in their britches, kind of. They think they know everything out the industry, but they haven't been in it. They don't know what it's like. They don't know what it's like out in the real world. But in reality, they know a lot about speaking to other people their age, about speaking to kids, about speaking to parents and getting them excited about coming into the industry and getting involved in horses. And they have the most fresh perspectives on the challenges of getting involved as a new person in the industry in the world as it is today, right? So, you know, when I was 8, 9 and wanting to ride horses and take lessons, 30 years ago, that was a much different world for my mom to navigate than parents trying to find their kids' lessons today. So why not have young people come into these teams and have their experiences valued appropriately and honored appropriately in terms of their creativity and their ideas and bringing kind of these big thoughts into the industry?
I'm just going to add one thing that you mentioned earlier. We have this really robust internship program at the American Horse Council, and I am constantly amazed at some of the work these students produce. I mean, just really hit it out of the park and just fascinating. So that's my hope for this whole team challenge, is we're going to see some really creative, innovative, out the box thinking to help us figure out where we go from here.
It's so easy to like hate on the young people, right? Like they think they know everything. They don't know anything, but these kids are so smart. And so I have full faith that we're going to get some really incredible proposals sent in for this challenge.
Yeah. So Jen, talk about the logistics for applying and what's the nuts and the bolts of the whole thing here?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first step is really these teams coming together. And Julie, like you said, these can be interdisciplinary teams. In fact, we hope that they are. We're kind of looking at teams of 5 to 10 individuals, but those can be made up of different majors and even different institutions potentially. So really trying to kind of keep things mixed up, keep things diverse so that we get a lot of different kinds of approaches and perspectives. Those teams will submit a proposal, and the proposal will include an overview of what they're suggesting, what their strategy is, and then how they will execute from a plan standpoint. They will underscore what aspects of their proposal are innovative to the industry. They'll provide a budget, right? So if they received that $15,000 grant, how would they apply it to serve the goals of this proposal? Of course, they'll share a bit about their team and who's who and how are they dividing roles and responsibilities. And then I think really importantly, they're going to be suggesting how they're going to measure the impact of their project if it's chosen. So what are their objectives? What are their KPIs, key performance indicators? And how will we know if what they do works should their proposal be chosen to move forward? And then one thing that I think is pretty neat, obviously we talked about the Here for Horses platform. We've challenged each group and they can determine how to do it, but how are they going to bring in Here for Horses, the hashtag, the destination? How can they bring that into their plan so that we're getting additional value and visibility to something that the Marketing Alliance has already built? That's a fantastic resource.
So I think one important thing to point out, because Emily really worked with me closely on kind of outlining what the RFP said, we are not limiting this to to just the hard cost that they might incur doing the project. They can actually pay themselves. They can outline, this is how many hours we think it's going to take, this is how much per hour we think is appropriate, and build that into that budget so that they're getting compensated for all of the development that they're doing too. So lots of really, I think, innovative, different ways that all these teams can go about doing all this.
Okay, so my question to Julie and Jen, because this was also a sticking process when I was helping Julie write the RFP for this and kind of forcing the hand of the Marketing Alliance a little bit on this, was what is the Marketing Alliance hoping they get out of this? What do you guys hope to see at the end of this challenge?
I'm happy to jump in. I think this is kind of a 1-2 punch, at least for me. Obviously, we hope that we're going to get some proposals that can go ahead and be executed and make a meaningful impact towards that larger goal of bringing more horse curious folks into the fold. So obviously, you know, increasing that pipeline for the industry is a goal and, you know, the reason behind why we've embarked on this initiative. But I also see a secondary benefit towards the same objective of industry sustainability, which is with these teams and participants themselves, right? Like, talk about getting meaningful engagement, participation, and potentially future career opportunity for these teams that are involved in building these proposals and potentially implementing them. So I think it's great that both the outcome of the projects as well as the outcome of the process of the team challenge should hopefully help us continue to support a robust and sustainable equine industry.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. What's the timeline?
Yep. So proposals will be due November 1st of this year. So teams will have, you know, the next few months, the summer and the front part of the fall academic season to put together a really thoughtful and comprehensive pitch. And then the Marketing Alliance and key stakeholders from the American Horse Council will evaluate those proposals against the criteria that we've laid out, making sure it's a really objective process. And we hope to notify potential winners, you know, those who move forward into implementation with that $15,000 grant no later than January 1st, 2027. So it'll be a great start to the new year with some momentum behind projects that are selected. And then the idea would be that that project is complete by June 1st, 2027. So the front part of next year will really be bringing those activities to life, measuring them, reporting out, and then the groups that do move forward will have the opportunity to present their results at next year's American Horse Council conference in Washington, D.C.
So we're really excited about this, everybody. I can honestly say that we have worked really hard to get the North American Equine Affiliated Academics, what do you call it, Emily? NAE.
NAE.
Because we want to get the university professors involved. We think they could suggest this to some of their capstone classes, et cetera. We've reached out to extension agents, same way. They know a lot of these kids because they're involved with them at the local level. Can they help us with that? We've talked to Pony Club. If a listener has an idea of some untapped avenue that we need to pursue, please just reach out to us at info@horsecouncil.org, and we'll be happy to talk about that. I know from talking to a couple of the professors when we were brainstorming this whole challenge that they're very excited to get some of their capstone classes to kind of organically get the students to say, hey, here's this great opportunity, go form a team. And you know, kind of help them guide through that. I think some of them are talking about also giving them an opportunity to use it for course credit.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember the Marketing Alliance having a hard number of proposals they're going to limit to funding. I think we left that kind of open-ended a little bit too. Like if we get 5 really good proposals, we might fund all 5 compared to just keeping it at 1 or 2.
Yep, that's exactly right. We didn't want to put, as Jen described, we didn't want to put too much boundaries around this whole thing. So we just sort of left that open-ended and we'll see what we get.
A little bit of Shark Tank, but I guess it's a tank instead, right?
So thank you again, Jen, for joining us today. For all of those that are interested in learning more about the Marketing Alliance or about the Team Challenge, visit us at info@horsecouncil.org. So our legislative and regulatory update for this episode is brought to you by W.F. Young. At Absorbine, they know that the time you spend with your horses, whether in the barn or in the saddle, is truly rewarding. So they have developed a line of high-quality and innovative horse care products that helps ensure your horses look great, feel good, and perform at their best. Since 1892, their passion and commitment has led Absorbine to becoming the horse world's most trusted name. Absorbine is recognized as a worldwide leader in specialized animal health care brands such as Absorbine Veterinary Liniment, UltraShield, Shosheen, Silver Honey, Hoofflex, and many more. Whether it's helping soothe muscles and joint pain or protecting your horses from biting and nuisance flies, caring for their hooves, or helping them look like champions, Absorbine is dedicated to horse care. And for more information, you can visit them at absorbine.com. So for this episode, we wanted to leave listeners with an update on an issue that continues to be top of mind across the animal, agricultural, and equine communities, and that is New World Screwworm. We've mentioned it before, but in light of the recent developments and some of the cases, we needed to talk about it once again.
And what a coincidence that one of our sponsors today makes fly spray. just thinking about that. And, you know, I'm sorry to say this won't be as brief as some of our other legislative topic updates. So please bear with us. Please keep listening because this information is really, really important. It's become especially important because for the first time since the 1960s, when the United States eradicated New World Screwworm, we have it back. There are now multiple confirmed detections within the United States.
And while those detections may seem sudden, the reality is that animal health officials have been watching this situation closely for years.
Yes. So after it was eradicated from the United States, screwworm basically remained confined pretty far down in South America, down below the Darien Gap in Panama. So if you kind of think of like where South America attaches to North America, they were really below that little essentially land bridge. And since, you know, 2022-ish, we've been monitoring its gradual movement northward through Central America from Panama and eventually up into Mexico. So as the pest moved closer to the U.S. border, federal and state animal health officials, livestock groups like us here at the Horse Council, we really work to increase our outreach and education efforts and prepare or do our best to prepare.
So I think it's fair to say that while the recent U.S. detections are concerning, they aren't entirely unexpected.
Yes, correct. So this is a situation that state animal health officials and federal animal health officials have been preparing for. And that's one reason it's important for horse owners to stay informed and kind of really understand what makes screwworm different from other pests, other flies you may encounter.
Well, one thing that's important to clarify right away, and we're sorry that this is a really yucky kind of conversation, is that screwworm isn't the same thing as the maggots or the botflies that many horse owners are familiar with.
Right. So, again, you might not want to be eating your lunch while listening to this, but most maggots feed on dead or decaying tissue. And botflies, which many of us are familiar with, kind of stick in one spot on the horse, like a little cyst. But New World screwworm is different because the larva, the maggots, feed on living things, living tissue. What happens is the female fly is attracted to any kind of open wound and lays eggs. And when those eggs hatch, the larva then feed on the healthy tissue from the open wound. And this causes wounds to become much larger and more severe over time. You know, they can get very easily infected. They can kill the animal because they get so large. And the other issue is that the maggots, the larva, burrow deep. So you don't necessarily see the larva, just the wound.
Ugh. The pictures are awful. And while a lot of the headlines focus on cattle, horses are absolutely susceptible. Any wound, from a small cut or a scrape to a surgical incision, castration site, a foal belly button, or even an insect bite that becomes irritated can potentially attract screwworm flies.
So one thing horse owners should be doing, especially if your horses live outside, is checking wounds daily and contacting your veterinarian if you notice anything unusual. So this would be wounds that don't seem to heal, if they have kind of excessive drainage, they're wet, they have foul odors, you know, irritation, visible larvae or maggots in the wound, you need to contact someone immediately.
One thing that's encouraging is that this isn't a new threat. We've dealt with screwworm before and we know how to fight it.
Yes, it's treatable and preventable, and we can get rid of it. And so the main thing we do is we fight the adult flies using something called the sterile insect technique.
Sounds like something like right out of a sci-fi movie.
It really is. So what happens is scientists, little fly farmers, raise millions of male screwworm flies, zap them with radiation, and then release them into affected areas. So what happens is when females, wild females, mate, they mate once, they lay their eggs, and then they die. So when they mate with sterile males, they then lay eggs that are not fertilized, so they don't produce offspring, and then they die. And so over time, that causes the screwworm population to decline and eventually disappear.
So instead of trying to eliminate every individual fly, we're preventing future generations from being produced.
Exactly. And it's a proven strategy. And it remains really the most important tool being used today all over South America and Central America, and now once again in the United States. So along with the sterile fly technique, we also have surveillance, so traps in the area to see if we're catching adult flies. We have animal inspections, livestock and wildlife animal inspections. The USDA tick riders and the Border Patrol tick riders are out there riding up and down to see if there's any affected livestock or wildlife. We have movement controls, so controlling how livestock are moving across the U.S.-Mexico border and in between states. And we also have what they're calling rapid response efforts, where teams of vets are going into areas with detections and treating livestock. And I think that is really important for folks to know. I think people get worried about reporting livestock with something like this because, you know, the big scary government's going to come in and euthanize all your animals. But that absolutely is not going to happen. If you report it, they're going to come in and they're going to treat your animal and they're going to fix your animal. And then they're going to start fighting the flies.
So speaking of that, what is the treatment? I mean, if a horse does get infected, what happens? And what does the treatment, course of treatment look like?
So like I said, the good news is this is treatable, especially when they're identified early. Treatment usually involves a vet coming out and helping to remove the larva or the maggots, thoroughly cleaning the wound, treating any infections present. And then there's medications to remove and eliminate any remaining larva that are in the ivermectin family. And for horses, there's an emergency use authorization for an injectable version of ivermectin, as well as they're looking into making sure oral ivermectin is also effective. And then again, we treat secondary infections, so things like antibiotics and cleaning wounds and things like that. The really, really hard part is, and this is where we need a lot of kind of public support, is that there's not a lot of medication specifically for horses. So USDA and FDA are working to approve things quickly for all species, but sometimes horses get left out of that conversation. So things that work really well for cattle, we don't necessarily have the research behind to know if they're as effective for horses or if there's any other side effects. So we need to work really, really hard to make sure we're also getting appropriate products for horses as well.
So if an owner suspects screwworm, this isn't something that they should try to diagnose or treat on their own. What should they do?
No, absolutely not. So again, report. It benefits you and everybody in your area if you report a suspected screwworm case to your veterinarian and get help. Contact your vet immediately. It can be treated. Suspected cases also need to be reported to the animal health authorities in your state so they can drop sterile flies in your area. If you report, you get, you know, the army of bug fighters coming to your area and fighting the bugs on your behalf. So reporting really only helps you.
So one question we've heard a lot is, why does this matter to me if there aren't any cases near me, near my horse?
This is a great question, because for those of us that live above the Mason-Dixon line, we hopefully will never have to worry about having screwworm in our area. So screwworm has kind of a big environmental line that it follows. It doesn't like cold weather. And so for us in the northern states, our winters aren't very habitable for them. And however, even if you're nowhere near the affected area, the presence of screwworm is going to have major implications for how horses move around the country and around the world. So if, say, you're an Arabian and you want to go compete at Scottsdale this year or next year, you're going to have some big things to think about in terms of animal movement and travel.
Well, and I know the American Quarter Horse Association is having its versatility finals right now. The Professional Rodeo Cowboy folks have a number of events that take place down in the southern half of the country. So as those horses are moving from, even from, say, up north, down south, and then they want to come back home, you're transiting through a lot of states, and all the states have different guidelines as to what the rules are for coming and going. But the most important thing is we want to prevent the pest from spreading into new areas. So you need to stay on top of what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. And so for things like, we have Calgary Stampede happening in July. There's dozens of competitors in Texas that usually go up to compete in that. But Canada is not currently accepting horses that have been in Texas within 21 days. So there's some thinking about that in terms of, can you go quarantine your horse somewhere within the time period before you go to Calgary? But yeah, depending on the situation, movement requirements can change too. So state health officials might require inspections before you can move your horse, health certificates before you can move your horse. Some states have treatment requirements, preventative treatment requirements, or just treatment if your horse has any wounds. There's a lot of different protocols that could be implemented to help reduce risk. Interstate movement can be limited, so I don't want people to think this is only an international movement thing. States can decide if they don't want to allow horses from other states to visit if their state is a screwworm-infested state. We already mentioned the U.S.-Mexico border. That is currently closed to all livestock going either direction, nothing in or out of Mexico, driving across the border. And again, we mentioned the Canadian restrictions too. So if you are looking to travel anywhere, you need to think ahead.
So I'm going to repeat what she said, folks, which is, it doesn't matter if you're showing, you're racing, you're breeding, you're buying, you're selling, you're importing, you're exporting, or transporting horses. This is something worth keeping on your radar.
Yeah, even just transiting through a state, if you're transporting horses, states can have different requirements just for transiting horses. So because movement requirements can change really quickly, the American Horse Council is working with other partners to create a searchable table of state-by-state movement and regulatory updates related to screwworm. So once available, that resource is going to be hosted on the American Horse Council's screwworm webpage. And also through the Equine Disease Communication Center. The goal is to provide one location where people can quickly find current movement requirements, regulatory updates, and guidance from their state affecting horse movement. And when I say your state, if you're traveling, you need to check the state you're leaving, the state you're going to, and any states you're going to pass through on the way there.
And one more thing I'd like to point out, folks, is we intend to make all of this available in English and in Spanish. So we are trying to cover all of our bases there. Emily, that's a good reminder that about where you go to find this information and why it matters.
Yes. And so we saw this with the EHV outbreak, right? Is that in situations like this, rumors and unverified reports spread very, very quickly on social media. So sometimes people hear about a possible detection or a rumored quarantine or a supposed movement restriction and share it before it's been confirmed. And that's why we really encourage horse owners to rely only on verified information from USDA APHIS, their State Department of Agriculture, their state animal health official, or any other trusted organizations working directly with these agencies. Don't just rely on your favorite horse influencer on Instagram or TikTok to tell you what's happening.
Yeah, and we will also want to put out there, Before changing your travel plans or canceling an event or sharing information with others, it's worth taking a few minutes to make sure the information came from an official source. The page at thehorsecouncil.org/screwworm includes educational materials, updates that we've gotten, frequently asked questions, horse-specific resources, and links to trusted information sources.
And for the latest federal information, including response efforts, current detections maps, outbreak maps for counties, and updates on eradication activities, we tell people to visit screwworm.gov, which is, again, the federal USDA website.
The bottom line is that this is a challenge we know how to address, but success does depend on awareness, vigilance, and cooperation from everyone involved with animal health.
And staying informed, monitoring horses for wounds, even if they're living out on the range, go check them every day. Working with your veterinarian, making sure your vet knows what they need to be looking out for. And also following movement requirements to make sure you are not the one accidentally spreading screwworm all play an important role in protecting horses and preventing further spread.
One more thought that occurred to me, Emily, if you would. What kind of timeline do you project we're on for eradication of screwworm? We've heard a bunch of different ideas floating around the industry, especially in social media, as you mentioned before. What's the official projection?
So the official projection is this is a long game. There is no short game here. The sterile fly technique can take several years to push it all back down into South America. And we're also in the middle of building a new factory to make more sterile flies, right? USDA has told us to prepare to make sure we're ready to keep fighting this through next spring. And then it's just going to keep kind of cycling until those sterile flies get done. So this is not like something like an EHV outbreak where it's all wrapped up within a couple weeks once all of the horses, sick horses are tracked down. This is something that's in the environment, and we need to be aware of monitoring for this and checking movement restrictions for years to come at this point.
We're going to continue to monitor developments and share updates as new information becomes available. And as always, if you'd like to learn more about today's topics or finding additional resources, visit us at horsecouncil.org. So thank you for joining us today. We'll provide more numbers and links in our show notes. We invite you to support our beloved industry and join the American Horse Council. You can earn a free subscription to our monthly newsletter and a lot of other member perks. We share the latest in all our legislative happenings, both federal and state, as well as more information that horse owners like you need to know.
And you can follow the American Horse Council on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, X, formerly Twitter, and LinkedIn. You can also subscribe to this podcast's RSS feed, and you can subscribe to Horses in the Morning on any podcast player and find all the shows, including ours, on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com.
And as we always like to say, we are #HereForHorses.